Hello, and welcome. John Locke said that the only defence against the world is a thorough understanding of it. And when we talk about narcissists, or we talk about the process of gaslighting, or just invalidating someone else's experiences and their perspectives, it's something that happens in all walks of life. It happens in the workplace, it happens in the home. It happens in relationships and friendships. It happens online. So having just a baseline knowledge, it isn't enough for a man, especially today. A man can say that he has red pill knowledge, that he's now self-aware, but there are blind spots. Like, if we use women as an example, when it comes to even the average female, I mean, what a woman understands at just an instinctive level, in terms of how to manipulate others using language, using sex, using general coercion and manipulation, it typically takes a man decades to understand through pain, through loss and experience. So men, they come to their realization that they've been manipulated and used just far too late in life, if at all. And you can read it. You can read it in a man's body language, the stereotypical henpecked husband, the way a man looks at the ground when he walks past you in the street. You can see it, whether he's been beaten down by life and from interactions with others or because of toxic relationships. A man carries his trauma on him. And too often, that a man's trauma is like a red rag to a bull. And a man in a toxic relationship, you can see it. All the hallmark signs are there. The signs are there of an abuse victim who's been made to question his own reality. And that man, his world, it gets turned upside down, and he's left in a state of shock. He's left in a state of anger. An anger that, he's been used, and that he's been lied to. That everything he's been fed up to this point has been a lie. Yet, of course, everywhere he turns, it's just people just continue to invalidate his experience. And they just push it all back on him. They just deflect. And it leaves that man just spinning in a circle. Now, often leads him just to question his experience and his reality. Maybe they're right. Maybe I am the bad guy. Maybe it was because I'm a bad person. Maybe I was in the wrong. And she was right.
Right? Wrong.
I'm going to talk about gaslighting, just in general. And I'm going to tie it into some psychological techniques and approaches. I also want to see if I can link it with some police interrogation tactics. Because there are some similarities. And this is going to be a bit of a ramble, but I'll try and tie it all together. In Australia, we have a saying, "She'll be right, mate."
The wonder from down under had won that famous mug, and here's the song we sang along in every Aussie pub.
She'll be right, mate, she'll be right. Just remember that you're an Aussie and you'll never give up the fight. When your back's to the wall, just give your all each morning, noon and night. She'll be right, mate, she'll be right.
Whatever it is, no matter how bad the situation is, she'll be right, mate. Your government is lying to you? She'll be right, mate. Your wife is divorcing you? She'll be right, mate. You've been falsely accused? She's taking the kids in the house? You're going to be homeless? She'll be right, mate. No, she won't be all right, mate. And the amount of blind trust that men place in women, it's equivalent to that of a young child looking to his mother just for protection and guidance and provision. And the amount of mental gymnastics that men undertake to justify and excuse a woman's behaviour, well, you've seen it.
I'm not seeing anyone right now. Guys are jerks.
God, I know, right? Guys are the worst.
It's not just women that engage in this. And we see it with employers, we see it with politicians, with cops, therapists. We see it with the media. They invalidate, they undermine, And then they put it all back on you. Yet they're the ones reframing reality.
Hello, Peter. What's happening? I'm gonna need you to go ahead and come in tomorrow. So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
And this seems to be the way of the future. So it takes more than just having your guard up when you're in a toxic relationship or dynamic. Because the fact is, most men are the rookie in the ring. They're in there with Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis in their prime. And your opponent has 50 pounds on you. And to top it off, you have to fight their whole corner and the entire crowd as well. Because women today, they have free rein to use sexual and emotional manipulation. And then they're celebrated and worshipped for exercising it. Now that's girl power. It's righteous retribution for woman's oppression. Now, not the individual, of course, but the collective. Now, it's just another victory for the sisterhood. And a woman's power, it resides in plausible deniability. Her violence, it doesn't leave any scars. And she's protected by the government. And her actions are glorified by the media. The righteous actions of a victim. No, it's not rape when a woman does it. No, it's not child rape. It's seduction. Oh, it's not murder. It's self-defense. Yeah? What was the cause of death?
Two of the witnesses decided not to testify, and the third guy, he committed suicide.
Oh, how?
He stabbed himself in the back 4 times and threw himself off a bridge. Very unfortunate.
Now, even Jodi Arias, she claimed self-defense after stabbing her boyfriend 27 times, and then she shot him in the head for good measure. So there's no stopgaps. There's no regulation. A woman's actions, they just run unchecked. Even when they reach just pathological levels of hysteria and paranoia. So you have to wonder, does it ever occur to women just how out of touch with reality that they've become?
When a person is insane, as you clearly are, do you know that you're insane? Maybe you're just sitting around reading Guns and Ammo, masturbating in your own feces. Do you just stop and go, wow? It is amazing how fucking crazy I really am. Yeah? Do you guys do that?
Ultimately, whether the behavior of women is malicious in intent or just instinctive or just careless, the end result is the same. Now, honestly, at this point, I can't tell which. I don't really care to, because I treat them all with the same amount of caution. Because all that matters is that you keep your wits about you. And you know how to protect yourself and spot the red flags. And gaslighting, it's a systematic process that breaks a person down, and the end goal is dependence on the perpetrator. And that victim, that victim's sense of personal value and self-esteem, will end up depending entirely on the validation they receive from their abuser. And sadly, you can see it. And men are just queuing up to fill that role. That's the psychology of a simp. That's a dynamic. They're primed for it. I've lost count. I've lost count of the number of men who have sacrificed their lives, sacrificed their health, and their freedoms, and their futures for women. And many did so for women that they barely knew, if at all.
Hi, Forrest. I know you just got back from Vietnam and you love me, but I'm gonna go run a train with this group of Black Panthers I just met.
Okay, Jenny.
Hi, Forrest. I know you came all this way to New York to visit me, but I'm gonna go do blow and have sex with a bunch of stockbrokers.
Okay, Jenny.
Hi, Forrest. Now that I have the most contagious and incurable disease known to mankind, I'll finally have pity sex with you.
Okay, Jenny. And I'll mow the grass and raise the AIDS, baby.
You remember that movie Gone Girl? Gone Girl, she went from princess to predator in a heartbeat. And that's how quickly it happens. So I remember years ago, a woman I knew, she came to my place. She was crying. She was all emotional. She said she was suicidal and all the rest. One minute she's this poor defenseless woman. And then she goes to the bathroom for a few minutes. And when she comes back out, she was literally like the character in Gone Girl. You know, sexually aggressive and cold as ice. You could see the transition. She went from passive to active. A passive victim to active perpetrator. And this was a replaying. Replaying of a dynamic she experienced as a child with an abuser. Now she was a victimizer. She had assumed that role. I mean, I was young and stupid, so I was confused. All I knew was that I didn't like it. I felt pressured, so I chucked her out. But she didn't go easy. I was very lucky she didn't get vengeful and send the cavalry after me. Because I was pretty abrasive about it.
I am so out of here!
Go on, get out of here, you fucking pain in the ass! You crazy pain in the ass! Get the fuck out of here!
You!
Go ahead, go back to turning tricks at old folk and you pain in the ass!
And that's how quickly it happens. And for young men, they don't see these red flags until they're right in the thick of it. But by then, it's often too late. And there are telltale signs that you are in a toxic relationship. And again, this could be in any avenue of life, now any relationship. But if you're always second-guessing yourself, if you feel like you're walking on eggshells, if you feel that nothing you do is ever good enough, or if you start doubting your own memory and your own perception of events, if you constantly feel that you're the bad guy, or if you believe the little voice in your head that you're not good enough, it's psychological manipulation. All the gaslighter needs to do is just sow seeds of doubt and then destabilize their target.
Listen, you little wiseacre. I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're little. I'm right, you're wrong. And there's nothing you can do about it.
I'll give you an example of a blind spot, and I'm doing this because every man has an ego. Every man has a big hairy pair of balls between his legs. So, yeah, as men, we all typically think, nah, she'll be right, mate. Nah, I know the score. She'll be sweet, mate. I'm good. Nobody can fool me. No way. Nah. Let's say you get brought in for questioning by the cops because you were in the vicinity when an armed robbery occurred. Now, the cop, he brings you into an interrogation room as a witness, and he asks you this question. Did you see the man in the yellow shirt? Now, most people would consider that question very carefully due to the way it's phrased, and it's very carefully phrased. And the way the question is formulated, it could lead to a number of other questions from you and from the cop in terms of clarifying specific details and specific times, you know, the when and the where you were at a specific time and where the man in the yellow shirt was, and also establishing what other individuals were present in the vicinity at that time and what your actions were leading up to the event and so on. And in the process, inadvertently, you would tie yourself down to a specific time and you'd volunteer other information. So it creates a butterfly effect. You've boxed yourself in. Because how do you know? Maybe they're fingering you for the crime. Maybe they're stitching you up. They could be questioning you over the armed robbery, or it could be for a completely unrelated crime. But it's simply a subtle way to get you to volunteer information about your whereabouts and your actions and so on. Because how do you know? Maybe some vengeful ex-girlfriend has made a false allegation against you, and you don't know. But by using the words, the man, did you see the man in the yellow shirt, as opposed to a man in a yellow shirt, the cops have stated in the definitive. They've stated that the man in the yellow shirt was present, even if there was no man in a yellow shirt. So it's a leading question. If they stated a man, you could just answer yes or no, so you wouldn't have to think about it. or seek clarification. And it doesn't seem like much, but by placing that thought in your head, they've established a narrative. And then it makes it far easier to then lead you, because they've sowed the seeds. You're providing the answers that they want now. You're playing their game, and they've established the narrative. They've established the framework of the dialogue and the ground rules. And that's just with one word. So that's why you don't talk to cops. That's how quickly it happens.
Hey, you know, I know this is the Bible Belt and everything, but where I come from, this is not that big a deal. I mean,
you son of a bitch. You're gonna fry.
No. Hey, no.
It's no different with women. 9 times out of 10, men play by women's rules, and it's women who establish those ground rules, and it's achieved primarily through language. And you look at what's happening currently. And instead of questioning the logic behind these lockdowns and questioning the validity of the testing and the criteria of diagnosis, we're more interested and whether our next door neighbor is conforming to social distancing. And we let others dictate the rules of the discussion, what can and can't be discussed. So the conversation, it occurs only within the parameters that the media and the politicians have set. And when others dictate the rules of the game, when they dictate the narrative and control the language, we limit and confine ourselves. So, you know, language is important. When you let others control and limit your language, it makes it easier to invalidate your experiences and then reframe your memory and reframe your perception and your thoughts. In the process, you're reducing yourself to a non-person. You're cannon fodder. Just another man on the scrap heap. Just another male statistic. I heard some woman recently, some pseudo-celebrity named Amber Rose. She looks like a porn star. I wouldn't be surprised if she is. You look at her and she's a walking red flag. But I heard her speak out recently regarding sexual consent, and it was at some feminist conference. And what she said was, she said that a man should be able to pick up on a woman's body language when she's uncomfortable, and he should know when she's not interested in sex, even if she doesn't voice it. And she said that a woman should not have to voice a disapproval or even say the word no. And she said that there's no exceptions when it comes to men. Zero exceptions. So, if a man isn't a mind reader, he's a rapist. If a man is autistic and he can't read body language, he's a rapist. There's a dozen other scenarios you could think of, but you can see the danger of engaging within those parameters of language, of dialogue. That's an overt example, but it's typically a lot more subtle than that.
It's like, well, if going out on a date with a guy makes me a slut, then that's just what I'm going to be.
I don't think going out on a date makes you a slut, but having sex with different men makes you a slut.
Well, what does it make you if you have sex with different women?
A slut maker.
Now, I knew an ex-crim who used to piss on the floor when the cops used to drag him in for questioning. Now, I wouldn't recommend you go that far with it, but you get the point. But it doesn't mean you have to become hypervigilant in the extreme or just examine every single word that comes out of a woman's mouth. You go mad doing that. The constant victim mentality would drive you up the wall, but you can be curious. You know, lead with a question as opposed to a statement. Because statements can box you in, but questions, they open up the dialogue. And it's putting the onus back on the other party. You'll get them to justify their position without you volunteering any information. Because you don't have to show your hand. They do. They have an objective. But the only way they can achieve that objective is if you play by their rules and you get emotionally invested. And women, they can be very limited in that regard. If you compare a woman to a boxer, if you keep outside her reach and you switch to southpaw, then you keep her off balance. You know, you switch it up. You don't let her dictate the language and the rules of the interaction. A lot of men, they'll recognize what I'm saying here. They know that look a woman will give you when you change it up. It's like a raccoon in the headlights. You see it, the jaw drops. That quizzical look. Her head just tilts slightly to one side. And she doesn't know what to make of you. You're not playing by the rules. You're not complying.
Boo, you whore.
Women, they're used to manipulating men in a very specific way. They did it with their daddies, with all their boyfriends, you know, their teachers, their employers. And they haven't had to switch it up before. Men, they just usually fall into line and let the woman dictate the interaction and the parameters. And often, yeah, I mean, the best tactic is to not engage in the first instance, but a lot of times that's just not possible. And if you get cornered, it helps to be prepared. So, you know, you can get to a point where you can detach when you recognize certain signs and behaviors. Otherwise, you run the risk of being blindsided.
Need more coffee. Need more Margaret.
Now, it seems counterintuitive, but a good tack to take is effectively the same approach you would take with a friend. A friend who's going through a crisis. You approach your friend with compassionate curiosity, and you ask questions to understand their perspective, you know, what's going on with them. But there's boundaries. Their issues are their issues, and yeah, that friend might be in an abusive relationship, or you might be a junkie or a basket case set on self-destruct. So it's not your job to rescue them or allow them to bring you down. But just engage intellectually, you know, rationally, calmly, but firmly, and with curiosity. But you don't let them cross your boundaries, because your safety comes first, and you're not offering solutions. You're not taking on board their problems. You're not volunteering information. Now, it's a tough love approach where common sense calls the shots. And none of this is guaranteed to safeguard you as a man. There's just too much gray area when it comes to relationships between men and women today. But now, as men, we need to have a higher level of awareness in relation to a great many things that are happening today. Now, she'll be right doesn't cut it anymore.
Now all you Aussie battlers, when you feel you've had enough and life's not really going well and life is pretty rough, just get out there and try again and back yourself a first. The Aussies always do their best when things are at their worst. Cause she'll be right, mates, or she'll be right. Just remember that you're an Aussie and you'll never give up the fight. When your back's to the wall, just give your all. It's morning, noon and night, she'll be right.
Once again.
You know, take therapy, for example. And far too often, a therapist will undermine and gaslight a client. It's typically careless rather than malicious, but you know, sadly, it's a familiar dynamic to a man. But you know, it's also still ultimately about control and fostering dependency. In therapy, you know, a man could say that he's experiencing a certain type of behavior in a relationship from his girlfriend or from his wife. He could state straight out, he could say that this is my experience, you know, this is the behavior, and this is the effect it's having on me. But therapists, both male and female, they often take the tack of invalidating the client. Are you sure you're remembering that correctly? This seems to be a familiar pattern for you. You were hurt by some of your exes, so you know, it's understandable you have issues with women. You know, you need to stop seeing all women through the same filter. Yeah, I recall a time years ago when I questioned a woman about her research in front of a group. She was giving a seminar, and I remember I asked her, I said, "Where did you get your statistics from? And can you provide sources?" I was very polite about it, but at the end of the meeting, I was pulled aside, and the language directed at me was framed as, and I quote, "Why did you feel the need to attack her. Attack. Now, language prompts a man to question his perception.
I'm the bad guy?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
And if a lie gets repeated often enough, it has the same net effect on a man's psyche. He ends up questioning his perception of reality. And men typically turn inwards and blame themselves as opposed to questioning the language and the intentions of women. So that vulnerability, that self-doubt, that insecurity, it's blood in the water to a narcissist. And now all the gaslighter needs to do is just drop the bait. And you see how a lot of men are today, especially younger men. And they're so hungry for attention and validation, they'll pay a woman just to shake her ass on cam, or pay her just to get creative with a cucumber. That poor vegetable. You know, I actually just found out what a waifu was the other night. Waifu. I thought it was like a Pokemon on your phone or something. How wrong I was. It took me a while to grasp the concept.
Nanda? 女の人の写真。綺麗な人やな。誰?
My wife.
But a gaslighter, they'll dig for information. They want to know all about your insecurities. They want to know about your vulnerabilities, what you're embarrassed about, what your regrets are. And they want to hear all about your troubles. They want to hear about your past relationships, about your past mistakes and experiences. And they want to know every recurring thought that you have. They want to know what makes you tick, you know, who the people are in your life, and the nature of those relationships, and the perception that those people have of you, and so on. Wow, she must really like me. She's paying me so much attention. No woman has ever shown this much interest in me. Oh, she's so affectionate. Oh, wow, she's a tiger in the sack. She wants it all the time. This is great. She's all I can think about. It's a real whirlwind romance. And every tidbit of information you provided, it then gets used as ammunition against you. And it's used to systematically erode your confidence and make you doubt your own reality. You ever pick your feet in Poughkeepsie? Come on, hey. You ever pick your feet in Poughkeepsie?
You got a friend? You gonna tell us who your man is?
When's the last time you picked your feet, Willie?
Who's your connection, Willie? What's his name?
What?
Answer him!
Aaron, what you talking about? Let me hear you say it. Come on. Have you ever been to Poughkeepsie? You've been to Poughkeepsie, haven't you?
I want to hear it! Come on!
Yes, I've... You've been there, right?
Yeah.
You sat on the edge of the bed, didn't you? You took off your shoes, put your finger between your toes and picked your feet, didn't you? Now say it!
Yes!
All right.
Confusion. You keep the suspect off balance. Now, we've got you, mate. We know you did this crime. We got witnesses, who place you as the last person seen with the deceased. We've got you red-handed, mate. We've got you. When a cop, when a detective takes this approach in an interrogation, it ramps up the anxiety, puts through the roof. And the detective, he's laying out the facts as he sees it. And then he starts developing a narrative for you, the suspect, about why you may have done the crime. And the detective at this point, he's looking for body language cues to see what you respond to. So he'll start throwing out possible scenarios. Maybe the victim provoked you. Maybe it was self-defense. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we talked to some of her friends and she has a bit of a drug history. So maybe she was a junkie. Yeah? Maybe it was a mercy killing from an OD that went bad. Now, is that what happened? So the cop at this point, he starts playing counselor. You're trying to get the suspect then to relax and open up, seeing what sticks. And the detective, he's watching for body language signals. He's looking for cues. If the suspect's anxiety eases up, then he knows he's on the right track. But any time you speak up to contest the narrative that he's presenting or say no or deny anything, the cop, he'll just shut you down and he'll talk over you. And if you shut up completely, or if you just slow up with your denials, or you don't ask for a lawyer, then in the cop's mind, he has his man. You're it. and he's found the right tech to take. And he's found the right narrative. And any cop worth his salt, he can take denials from a suspect and just reframe them. Frame it as a crime of opportunity or a crime of passion and so on. No, I would never hurt anybody. No, I don't have it in me. Yeah, I can see you're a good guy. And what that tells me is that this is not normal behavior for you. You panicked. It happens to the best of us. But now you have a chance to do the right thing. You're a good guy. Let's give the family closure. Come on, where's the body? It's termed countering. Deny, invalidate, reframe. And it rips the ground out from under a man. It undermines and invalidates his memory. Then it reframes it. At this point, what you need is a friend in that sweaty little room. Because your anxiety is through the roof. You need a pal. And then the cop, he gets in your physical space. He softens his tone. He gives you a good old pat on the back. There, mate. I'm here to listen. But in the cop's mind, if you start to cry, fuck you, you're guilty. You start to panic, fuck you, you're guilty.
Want to know what I think about the Fifth Amendment? There it is. That's what I think of the Fifth Amendment.
You ever heard the term giving someone the third degree? The third degree, it used to describe police interrogation methods back in the day, where cops could legally beat a suspect to get a confession. It was standard practice. Of course, at least they had the decency to do it behind closed doors back then. In Melbourne now, they just do it in broad daylight.
Hey, she goes.
But at this point in the interrogation, the detective, he presents the alternative question. And this is your out as a suspect. So he gives you the choice of two motives. And he gives you the first one is a really shitty motive that presents you as just a cold, malicious killer. And the second one, it's more humane, it's more compassionate. And it will sound better to a jury. And once you choose one of the motives, the cop, he then ramps it up. He brings other people into the room, so you have to confess to other people and just justify the more humane motive that you've just chosen. Because at this point, because of the stress, because of the anxiety, you desperately want to win their validation and approval. Because at this point, what you want, what you really want above everything else, is just to get the fuck out of that room. And that's the level of anxiety you're feeling at this point. You'll confess, you'll sign anything. You'll accept another's narrative just to stop the stress, just to stop the anxiety. You want out. You're broken. You just want the pain to stop, so you'll say or do anything. And that, unfortunately, is a familiar relationship dynamic for many men in toxic relationships. They just want it to stop. They just want to avoid conflict, so they don't feel the pain. So this is a complex psychological process going on here, and it has deep roots.
Look, it's over.
Would you think that you could treat me like some stupid fucking Goomba housewife? You think I'm gonna let some fucker shit all over me just because he buys me some ridiculous gaudy fucking ring?
Where the fuck do you get off, huh?
You don't care.
What do you think? You don't even want my problems? You think my life's a fucking picnic?
Oh, poor you. You got a fucking dream life compared to mine. Nobody cares if I'm alive or dead.
I didn't just meet you. I've known you my whole fucking life.
That's right. Take a dump wherever you please and then just walk away.
My mother was just like you. Bottomless black hole.
Oh, the mother now. I surrender. Burn me at the stake.
You know what? You're fucking crazy.
All I ever asked for was kindness.
And when a man internalizes the belief that he is less than the cycle of indoctrination is complete. Because even when the man knows what the truth is, that his girlfriend did something malicious to him, that she slept with his best friend, she stole money from him, or did something else to him that was horrible, he shuts down his own inner voice, and then he gaslights himself. Because he'll do anything to avoid conflict. Now, he doesn't want to face his abuser's wrath. So he has to win her approval and her validation at all costs. So he convinces himself that he's wrong. And you've seen it. I mean, these guys will fight to the death to protect this narrative in their head. You know, this ideal of her being just the perfect angel. Now, his entire identity at this point is just built around gaining and keeping her approval. So the roots, they do run deep. Now, here's a dirty trick. Here's a good one. Your girlfriend starts an argument with you, and you bite, and you get emotionally invested, and then she raises her voice, forcing you to raise yours. And she keeps ramping it up, and ramping it up, ramping up the volume. And then she pulls away, leaving you as the only one shouting. And then she gets to frame you as the abuser. And then she records it and plays it in court. Deny and dismiss. You need help. Oh, gee, no, you need psychological help. You're imagining things. No, you're crazy. But if you go to therapy or if you take medication, she can then paint you as crazy. If you were sexually abused as a child or experienced domestic violence in a prior relationship, then she gets to play therapist. And she gets to paint you as just replaying the abuse you suffered as a child or in a previous relationship on her. It gets really nasty. And whenever I hear the question, who hurt you, from a woman, I always think men don't realize just how nasty that implication is. And my advice, if I were to ever give advice, is never disclose an abuse history to a woman, ever. It's simply ammunition. And her using it against a man can and often does become just an extremely effective means of control on that woman's part. Like, she takes his abuse history and his history of bad relationships, and she uses it to chip away at his self-esteem. And we see a similar dynamic with single mothers and how they engage in spousification with their sons. That's a toxic relationship with lifelong implications.
How do you feel like your life would be different if you had grown up with a father?
I'd have had some discipline. I'd have had more confidence.
You seem pretty confident to me.
Now I am. Because now I believe that I'm my own man. And I'm a man. You know, money gave me confidence. The screams of the crowd gave me confidence. But before that, I was a shell of a man.
And it's not just women who engage in these tactics. It's men too. So, you know, be on guard. But with gaslighters, it's the same pattern of behavior. And the tactics, they're pretty standard, but they're effective. The gaslighter they'll kick off an argument, and then they'll put the blame on you for initiating it. Now, you're the troublemaker, never them. And whatever you say, it's just baseless. It's just, no, it's irrational. You're victimizing them. And they just deny, they deny, deny. And they could do all manner of horrible things to you, then turn around and accuse you of doing it to them. They'll beat you to the punch, because that's the story that they will present to others, to your friends, to anybody in earshot, to gain sympathy. And they recruit sympathizers. Now, they go behind your back. They'll win your friends over to their side. Now, how many men that you know have broken up with women and had their entire friend network leave them high and dry and side with their ex over them? Now, women are especially good at this tactic, they'll use whatever it takes. They'll use sex to win support. They'll play the victim. They'll lie through the teeth to present the man as a devil incarnate. They'll self-harm and say you hit her. They'll have others give false testimony by essentially using the same tactics they used on you to seduce them and win them over. And hey, you know, the narrative is that men are evil, right?
But let's get down to brass tacks. Let's get right down to it, boys. Let's get right down to it. Men are shit. What? Men are shit. Well, isn't that what they say?
I mean, that's the prevailing opinion. The woman, she has all the cards in her favour. And now everyone around you is taking the side of the gaslighter and invalidating your experience. Divert, divert, divert. Whatever issue you bring up, they just put it back on you. Oh, wow. You're just hypersensitive. Oh, you're overly sensitive. You're a really toxic person. And just like cops, they counter. They use countering. They call your memory into question. Oh, no. You got it all wrong. No, that's not what happened. You're confused. And they just keep denying. I don't recall saying that. No. You're imagining that.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. Shit, no, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Do you pick your feet in Poughkeepsie? Now, they keep you off balance. They ramp up the stress and the anxiety. They get you doubting yourself. They really pile on the shaming and the guilt tactics. They dig up. They dig up all of your shame. They dig up your vulnerabilities. And the end goal is to get you feeling guilty and ashamed for even questioning their shitty behavior in the first instance. And they cut you off. They cut you off from friends, cut you off from family. They want you isolated with no support. No support, no contact with others who would quite rightly point out that what you're experiencing is abuse. They wear you down to a nub. Now, just like a little kid who experiences abuse, they want you to shut down. And whenever they go on the attack, they want you to shut down. They want you paralytic. So they can then step in and present themselves as a rescuer. And what I've detailed here, it's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to gaslighting, but you can see how intricate the process is. Because I see more and more men, especially young men, just pedestalizing women these days and raising women up as the answer to all their problems, as just the literal gatekeepers to their happiness. And they're walking and they're blind. And that desperation, that mentality, is what will get a man chewed up and spat out. Be on the watch.